Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts, sports journalist David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves, chillin', talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, the place to get your latest and greatest Steelers information. And I'm David Todd. It's Season 8, Episode 28. And Dave, before we get started here on football, obviously a tragedy overnight, the biggest mass shooting in American history, and it's where you live in Las Vegas. Obviously, I'm glad you're safe. I saw it was an outdoor concert venue, so I knew you wouldn't be in an environment like that, which, you know, I hate to say that gave me great comfort, but we're not going to get into the political side of things and whatever, but it's just a tragedy. And unfortunately, this is happening all too often in American society and the world at large.
Yeah, tough day. It's going to be a tough day, week, month for Las Vegas to have something like that. You know, you always wonder in a venue or a city like Vegas with so much where people congregate, you know, in one area so often that part of you knowing the state of the world makes you wonder, curious why this hasn't already happened sometimes. And unfortunately, it did at the Mandalay Bay, and just tragic. And it's going to be interesting to see what motive, if any, there was behind this, and go from there. But I tell you, it really makes you wonder about going to highly populated events, especially sporting events. It's always been on the back of my mind. I don't know if you remember, David. Do you remember as a kid watching Black Sunday?
The movie.
Yeah, that scared the hell out of me as a kid. And really, I guess the only reason I watched it because Steelers, it supposedly happened at this Super Bowl between the Steelers and the Cowboys. I think that's what drew my interest to it as a kid there. But it's really scary that the world that we live in today. And people can find comfort for their loved ones that were lost in this.
Yeah, I don't have anything to add because it takes us down a rabbit hole that we're not going to go into here. But thoughts. It's a tragic event, and wish there were things better than words to say. Okay, let's get to football. And the Steelers won a game in Baltimore, Dave. And if we sat here on Friday, and I guaranteed you the Steelers would win the game 26-9, there'd probably be a pretty good taste in your mouth. You probably have trouble, conjuring up things to be upset about, because that sounds like a dominating win, a 17-point win. Margin of victory in this series is rarely that large. We talk about how many games decided by 3 points and by 7 points. The Steelers went 26-9, and I do think there's a lot of good to take away from this game, Dave. But I will tell you, there are a lot of Steeler fans, and at some level, my discomfort with how the Steelers played offensively in the second half made it feel a lot like the win over the Vikings, that 20-9 win over the Vikings, where the Steelers get a win against, a team that we can't tell you yet whether they're good or not, but you didn't come away just feeling wonderful about it.
Yeah, and look, I mean, if you would have told me that score ahead of time, I would have believed you that score could have happened, knowing the shape of the Ravens coming off of their game in London against the Jaguars, and knowing that Brandon Williams was missing the game because of an injury. I would have believed that score. Now, the minutiae inside of that and how it all went down, I'd probably believe that if you told me as well, because the Steelers' offense hasn't been razor sharp through the first three games and now through the first four. And, you go back to this past week and Ben Roethlisberger talking to the media, and boy, he spoke the truth, did he not? He said he needs to reel it in a little bit, probably not key in so much on Antonio Brown, and that the offense probably needs to force the run. And really, all of those things happen. The run... Look, I mean, they had success, and they had more success as the game went on. I understand them sticking to it. I remember you and me having a conversation last week saying, geez, just get yourself in third and six or shorter situations. 4 yards on the first two downs doesn't sound like all that big of a deal, but it really is right now for this offense. And while they were able to run the ball good at times, mostly via the counter and via some inside zone, split zone, type runs, it was clunky. You know, it had its clunks as well. And then you go to the passing game, and Ben Roethlisberger, still rode Ben Roethlisberger, if you will. He hasn't thrown for 300. Not that passing yards is the end-all, do-all for a quarterback, but he hasn't thrown a 300-yard game in, what, 10 or 8 or 10 or so games now. He wasn't overly sharp with a lot of his throws against the Ravens. In fact, what, 2, 3, 4 of them were batted down at the line of scrimmage. And then, you know, a deep ball to AB that was probably ill-advised. Now, the interception probably shouldn't go into books for him as an actual interception if anybody saw the game. But, yeah, a little bit clunky. And, boy,
if we're going to go through it, I mean, he missed Martavis on a touchdown. I mean, he, you know, just missed him.
Yeah, and at first I thought, well, maybe he got rid of that ball. Maybe he got rid of that thing a little bit early because of Chris Hubbard. And Chris Hubbard
getting run over.
Yeah, he didn't have a great game as a pass protector. I thought Hubbard was better thought Hubbard's a better run blocker than pass protector, but Hubbard had a tough go of it, I thought, against the Ravens. But you go back and kind of watch it, and Ben kind of has, I think, time. He just overthrew him, and he said during his post-game press conference that, gave the spiel about, you know, I never thought that I'd be able to overthrow Martavis, but I did. And he was wide open, and as he said, that would have been, you know, the dagger, if you will.
Absolutely. That ends that game right there. Yeah. All right. So let's start at the beginning. And the two things, one is the very good news, fortuitous news out of the press conference at the end of the game. It doesn't sound like the Steelers had any injuries. Another week, look, this is the NFL. Every week we're going to hear, you know, 3 or 4 name guys get injured, and then, you know, 5 to 10 other guys that you probably don't know or way less familiar with get injured. The biggest name this week, of course, Dalvin Cook, looks like he tore his ACL from Minnesota. He's out. But the Steelers came out of this game clean, Dave. And let's go to the inactives because, look, we spent some time starting even on Wednesday talking about this, and we saw kind of, Martavis Bryant being ill, and then we saw the practicing and who didn't practice. And one of the things we've learned is with muscle injuries, we saw it with T.J. Watt 2 weeks ago, the past 2 weeks. We saw it with Marcus Gilbert now this week. That you can generally assume for the Steelers, the way they look at hamstring strains, if it's not a tear, whatever, is a 2-week injury. If you don't practice the first week and you're not going the beginning of the second week, you're probably going to be down. And even if you do go, as we saw with Tuitt and Watt, you're likely to be down. They're a little bit, they seem to be, that seems to be the modus operandi. Now, if you've got a skeletal injury like Ramon Foster, where you can wrap it up and do whatever, you might be able to go. So let's go through this, Dave. And you were pretty much on top of this. You've been bringing up the James Harrison thing. I don't think we're ever going to know how much was based on the fact that he didn't practice Thursday. I didn't actually see if he went Friday or not with the flu.
No, Friday was the day he was added as not practicing. He practiced Wednesday and Thursday.
And he did go Thursday or he didn't?
He did go Thursday.
I thought he didn't go. Okay. So anyway, Harrison comes down with the flu that Bryant had. He missed a couple days. So look, you can say maybe he was okay. And if it was the Super Bowl and he was needed, I'm sure he would have played. But, you know, you're a little weaker. If Villanueva lost 20 pounds, you have other guys. So if you're making a choice, it's an easy choice. But why don't you take us through the list?
Yeah, and the list was really – I had the questions about the safeties. You never know when you're dealing with those soft tissue injuries. Mike Mitchell with a hamstring, and he had yet to miss a game during his Steelers career. So I had penciled him in his playing. But I nailed the other ones. Joshua Dobbs, Eli Rogers was down. We had heard during the week that Justin Hunter was going to get the helmet. We had heard that Eli Rogers was going to get pulled off of punt returns, and that happened. Gerald Hawkins remains. Now, the good news with Gerald Hawkins is he's no longer on the injury report. The bad news for Gerald Hawkins is because of that knee injury, he probably wasn't, you know, up to speed with everything. Probably going to take him a little bit of time to gain some confidence back. But he was down again. Marcus Gilbert with that hamstring injury. Once Marcus Gilbert went full on Wednesday and it went backwards on Thursday with limited, you could tell what direction he was going. With Stephon Tuitt back, it wasn't hard figuring out that Daniel McCullers was going to be down. And, of course, Mike Mitchell not dressing after ending the week as questionable allowed Brian Allen to get a helmet, and then James Harrison. And look, David, people seem to be shocked on Twitter and on the comment section of Steelers Depot yesterday, and I don't understand why.
You understand why in general. First of all, James Harrison.
Well, because of who it is, they think he needs to be out there, but. I mean, this is a numbers game, okay? You have five outside linebackers. You have nine in total on your roster. If all nine of those guys are healthy and the rest of your injury list is sort of spread through various position groups, you can almost count on one of those linebackers to be inactive. And if James...
Yeah, and it's a simple choice, as we've said, you know, almost from week two after Harrison played so little, you're making a choice between Motes and Harrison. And, you know, look, I think it's an easy thing. If the guy's sick, it's not really even a choice. I'm not going to say, we'll never know exactly what the choice would have been, but Harrison did miss a day of practice and he had an illness, so it's an easy choice. Now, obviously, it's going to be interesting going forward to see if those same decisions need to be made, and it sounds like it will be this week because you think, you know, you're going to have guys coming back and it doesn't sound like anybody was added. So this week will really be the telling week, I think, in terms of where James Harrison stands in the picture of, you know, the Steeler linebacker core.
Yeah, you know, Arthur Motes, and I keep saying, you know, while not great at it at his age, Arthur Motes still plays on special teams, and James Harrison doesn't. And if Harrison stays behind Anthony Chickalo on the depth chart, and the fact that Motes can play both on the right and left-hand side, and look, I mean, even when Debo's dressed, he's only played seven snaps in total defensive snaps so far. Motes, I'm looking at it right now, played him and Chickalo only played two snaps, defensive snaps yesterday, but Chickalo played 18 special team snaps and Motes played seven. Okay, so James Harris, I'm sorry, folks, he's not playing on special teams. It's just not going to happen. And because of that, like I said, if you have nine linebackers that are healthy, and it looks like that's going to be the case going into this game against the Jacksonville Jaguars, and let's assume nobody else is getting added to the injury list. In fact, you're going to have Mitchell perhaps, you know, I don't know, you might feel good enough that you could give him another week off, but even if that's the case, Brian Allen gets that helmet. If Marcus Gilbert comes back this week, then that means Matt Filer goes back to the inactive list. If nothing else, I mean, what else is changing? I dare anybody to give me a seventh name other than James Harrison to be a candidate for the inactive list.
Yeah, the other name is Motes, and it'll be, you know, that'll be the question is look, I obviously Arthur Motes' seven special team snaps are replaceable, so that's not going to be the end of the world. But, yeah, that's the question. And, if you know, this will be the interesting time to see it. And I will tell you, Dave, you talked about, you know, how the snap counts were differentiated. It's very interesting to see here as the season goes on what the Steelers are doing when they had – look, they obviously feel Stephon Tuitt is fully healthy. The Ravens ran 69 offensive snaps yesterday, roughly, at least, you know, different people count different ways, but we'll just use that. And Hayward played 57 and Tuitt played 56. And Tyson Alualu, who's been good in Tuitt's absence, 14, and LT Walton had 7. So, you know, that's kind of your D-line split with Javon Hargrave again playing like 30 to 40% of the snaps, getting 29 of the rest. The linebacker split is, you know Shazier is going to be out there for essentially every play, and, you know, Vince is going to be out there until they go nickel. So he played just a little bit more than 50% of the snaps. And then, you know, of course, you mentioned the two guys on the outside are getting all the snaps with – with Ciccolo and Moats only getting two. So the Steelers defense is, you know, it's pretty set here in terms of who's doing what. Hilton's getting the most of the snaps. Gay's getting kind of 25% of the snaps. We know who it is now. I mean, four games into the season, we know what the defensive rotation looks like. And it's, the only thing that's going to change thing now is injury. It is going to be this group of guys getting this kind of playing time. I think that kind of defined it there, with Wilcox in for Mitchell.
Yeah, and look how much dime they're playing now. I mean, Vince Williams, all you have to look at, you know, look at the snap. If you want to kind of math it up in a hurry, just look at look it up. Look at the total amount of defensive snaps. That's 69. Look at the
Vince Williams and William Gay.
Right. Look at the snaps that Vince Williams played. Was 41. The difference of that's 28. William Gay played 28 snaps.
That's all you need to know, man. You don't have to be a math major to get that one.
Boy, anybody can blog nowadays, can't they? And you look at some of the stuff out there, and pretty much everybody is.
Yeah, right. All right.
Or anybody is.
All right, so let's get into the game here a little bit. First play of the game, I'm sure everybody's just like, oh my gosh, here we go again. The situation where they go over the left side for the Ravens go over the left side for 22 yards running the ball. And then, Dave, essentially the Ravens didn't do squat the rest of the half. I mean, that was it. The Steelers, you know, made a play or two to stop that drive. Just inside Steeler territory, and the Ravens really the rest of the half nothing. I mean, they didn't sniff anything.
Yeah, you know, outside now here's the thing: the Steelers were committed to the run on Sunday, but the Ravens sure didn't seem like they were. And let's face it, even though. I mean, this felt and seemed like the Steelers had this thing in the bag. Pretty much the whole game, or right from the get-go, I should say. The scoreboard, of course, dictated it was a lot closer to that than that. The play on the field did not carry over to the scoreboard, if you will. And the Ravens, I thought, kind of got away from the run, because if you actually look at the runs that they had, they had some success rates there, that would say, okay, maybe we need to stay a little bit more committed to them. And boy, that Alex Collins, maybe they found them a guy there to go along with Terrence Wesson and Javarius Allen there moving forward. And they like to run him outside there. He of course had their two biggest plays in the game, explosive plays, were both runs by Alex Collins. But I thought that they got away. Now, with that said, I talk about their nice success rates during the run. Five of their unsuccessful plays lost yardage, and then of course one of those was included in that was Ryan Shazier and Cameron Hayward against what looked like kind of an outside zone play. Both those guys busting through and then forcing a fumble, which ended up being obviously a huge play in that game there. But yes, the Steelers kind of thwarted the running game, but I don't think people should say, okay, it's all fixed now either, because as I said, they did have a high success rate, even though they ran the ball just 15 times, which isn't that amount of times I think that Le'Veon Bell or ran it the week before, you know?
Yeah, so. it was exactly almost identical. The numbers, a little bit similar. Exactly. That's it. They were taken out of the game.
Yeah, so you still have to kind of, especially, really on both sides, as you mentioned, open up the game. Ryan Shazier kind of looked like he guessed wrong and shot the wrong gap. And as Dan Fouts says, look at that hole. It's nearly 6 yards wide.
It was, too. And I talked on Friday about run blitzing and how, I would expect this. And Keith Butler said they'd do some things differently. There's always a question of, is it a run blitz or is it guys attacking the line of scrimmage because they read a key? Well, I mean, you look back to the Bears touchdown, the first touchdown in that game. You look at plays like that. And if you're going to be an inside backer, and this is Vince and Shazier, you've got responsibility to fill holes and fill gaps And you can't, if it means you've got to wait an extra tenth of a second to find out what the right hole is, you need to do that, because you shoot the wrong hole on a play like that. Where, and we saw it on the other side. We saw the Steelers do the same thing with Nixon DeCastro out there. And you got big guys like that taking on an edge guy and a defensive back. You're going to get big yards down the sideline. We saw that James Conner, you know, that toss sweep left or whatever it was. But, yeah, so that opening drive, Dave, the play of the drive, and, you know, we talk about setting a tone early. It's Bud Dupree busting through for that six-yard loss on Terrence West on first and 10 on the Steelers 40. That was a drive killer for them. And as we saw here later in the half, you know, for the Steelers and their opening two drives, as you pointed out on Twitter and I talked about it, you know, they got inside the red zone and immediately carries for loss on first down and penalties by the offensive linemen. And those killed those drives. And, you know, we talk about it all the time, and it sounds almost trite to say, but penalties are killers. And the whole first half, drives were decided, you know, largely, you know, penalties and then the turnover. I mean, it wasn't, you know, nobody was – teams were killing themselves in these drives. And well, you know, I give Bud Dupree credit. That was a really big play. And from there, the Steelers absolutely dominated the half. Now, let me ask you, the longest drive in the NFL this season, the Steelers get the ball and they do that. When you see a drive like that, everybody, there's so many people, even, you know, people I have a ton of respect for, Dave, who are like, you know, the Steelers have to come away with a touchdown here. They have to do this. They have to do that. People say that all the time. Look, they got 3 points. It's not ideal. The game isn't over. And again, in the second drive, they're like, oh, the Steelers are going to lose because they came away with two field goals. Hey, two field goals on long drives are better than no points. I don't kind of sometimes understand the mentality of, you know, if they don't do this, the game's over when they're already ahead and they're moving the football.
Yeah, I mean, obviously you want them to end in touchdowns there, and obviously you don't want to make a large habit out of settling for threes instead of sevens. But to open, look, they were pinned back at their 16 or whatever, starting that opening drive there. You're in hostile territory, Yeah, your offense hasn't really been clicking so far, and to run, what was it? Well, I think it was officially credited as 16-play, 84-yard drive there to open things up there. You used 10-23, and the way that you did it, you know, coming out after saying that you wanted to force the run, and boy, did they force the run, and they put the ball in Le'Veon Bell's hands, you know, nearly, you know, every play.
First
5 or 6 plays there. The way they did it was excellent. And, you know, you get down there and then, look, penalty, why does it always seem like their offensive penalties like to come deep in the other team's end of the field for some reason? I mean,
let me ask you, but before we get down there, so they get Ben gets sacked on a first and 10 on the Steelers 25. And you think, you know, OK, now, you know, this is a drive killer. Second and 8 from the 17. What'd you think about James Conner coming in there and running off left tackle for 23 yards?
Oh, yeah.
Surprised that he got there. Well, obviously he was great. Surprised. And did you agree with what, I don't know if it was Fouts who said it or not, but that James Conner's not a physically different change of pace back, but his running style, anybody's running style, is a change of pace to Le'Veon Bell. Do you buy that? Do you buy that bringing somebody in who's just going to attack, you know, he's going to just run downhill immediately? Do you think that's something the Steelers should work into or use a little bit more?
Well, obviously, I'm not sure that Le'Veon Bell can game in, game out, be relied on touching the football 40 times a game. In those situations where, and you know, your script might say one thing, but circumstances we saw in the game against against the Bears, your script can change in a hurry due to, you know, game conditions and whatnot. So you might have all the intentions of the world coming out and running a lot, and then game dictates you don't. I think the Steelers obviously came into this game thinking we want to run Le'Veon Bell, we want to run him a lot, we want to get the football in his hands a lot too. In those instances, I think you do have to carve out situations where you can get him off the field for a play or two. And they did. And I think it might be a – and, you know, the offensive line, even if you asked every member of the offensive line, you'd probably get a vanilla response. Hey, we just block them up out there. A lot of times we can't tell you who's in the backfield, back there running the football. And obviously that should be the response anyway. I don't think it throws things off too terribly much with the difference in styles of running. James Conner more apt to slam it up somebody's backside a little bit quicker, obviously, than Le'Veon Bell. And then – you know, Connor can get that edge too. Say what you will. Hey, you know, he looks a little bit trimmer than he did at Pitt. And you know, look, he can run that power. You know, and follow some of those lead blocks. So yeah, I mean, I guess what you're saying is, are you asking maybe if I'm opposed to maybe Connor even getting a series every third or fourth series? Is that kind of what you're leaning?
Well, I guess, you know, we talked about at the beginning of the year that James Conner would be a 3 to 5 touch guy a game. And I still think that's the right thing. But I think what was interesting there is the Steelers were 7 plays into the game, and we're not used to seeing that type of stuff. It's usually kind of late in the half, and then sometime in the second half maybe. But we saw on that first drive, we saw all 3 backs. Now I say that, and then, you know, we didn't see Terrell Watson again. He carried on that 3rd-and-1, and he seems to be
Mike,
now.
Mike Thomas sure liked that 3rd-and-1 too.
He did.
I think Mike Tomlin has Watson stashed on his fantasy roster or something. That 3rd-and-1 was. You look at Tomlin's reaction. That was a 102-yard run, and you can't even have a 102-yard run from the line of scrimmage in the NFL, and you'd swear that was what it was to see Tomlin's response.
Yeah, so both, you know, we see both guys in there on that opening drive. Now it was obviously a long drive and a lot of plays, but and Le'Veon Bell touched it the first 5 times. So I don't have no issues with it, whatever. Just I guess the question is, how should the Steelers, regardless of what they've been doing, what do you think? Are the Steelers using James Conner the right way? Would you like to see a little more? You think they're doing it just right? Would you like to see him get a whole series, as you mentioned?
I think they're doing it right now, but I think we have to keep in mind that James Conner is a rookie. He did miss time during training camp in the preseason. He's probably getting right to that stage right now where – you know, the coaches really, really trust him, and he has a complete grasp of the playbook. Because here we are at the quarter mark of the season here. So, with that said, and you know, like I said, Le'Veon Bell can't be expected to touch the football 40 times a game. I really think 35 times a game touching the football might be a little bit high for him for the amount of snaps that he plays on top of that. So I think what you might start seeing, maybe not necessarily next week, well, hopefully they'll get a big enough lead on Jacksonville where they can give some other people some playing time, but we'll see. But I think by midseason, David, maybe one series – you know, a game, you know, could go to Connor, maybe 10, 11, 12, maybe he can double his snap count, get Le'Veon Bell off the field, you know, moving forward. And I think that's right. And then you can still, in both situations with both those backs, if you get into a third short situation or a second and short situation, even if you want to use it as a decoy, you can put Watson in there. Of course, obviously you don't want to put a blinking red light on his helmet when he comes into the game in third and short that he's going to get the football. So you're going to have to mix it up a little bit, a time or two when he does get in the game. But, yeah, I mean, I'm not opposed to it. I think several people on Twitter are saying, oh, you know, should Connor get the ball more? I don't think it's a matter of should he. I think it's an option that should be there now.
So Le'Veon Bell touches the ball 9 times the opening drive. And then, you know, Dave, from that point on, it's, you know, the Ravens go 3 and out. The Steelers effectively, you know, 4 plays, they punt. The Ravens go 3 and out again. The Steelers then have the – what is it? They get the ball, they get great field position, and they go from the 46, and you know they get down there again in that situation, and they get another penalty. So let's talk about the offense. I cut you off earlier. You were talking about the offensive line penalties in the red zone both times, and this time Villanueva with the headbutt, the second headbutt. You know, what do you, there's just not much to say. It's just a dumb penalty, right?
Yeah, I mean, I get on the coaches all you want and complain about Todd Haley all you want. Some of these things. I think that holding call on David DeCastro might have been a little ticky tack. But what Villanueva did cannot be explained. Hubbard just a couple false starts there. I mean, these things are happening. Of course, there's no good time to incur a penalty, an offensive penalty or defensive penalty for that matter. But they seem to be happening at the worst times. And then, you know, I wrote about last week about how this offense is just getting in too many third and seven and longer situations, and that happened again yesterday, you know, and it's mainly because of penalties. They were in, I think, a total of seven third downs and seven or longer. Five of those were 10 yards or longer. And then they only convert two of them, and you're wondering what the hell happened. You know, you look at their third down percentage, and it doesn't have those asterisks in there saying, see Dave's Twitter account type of things. You know, you just think, oh, man, what happened to the team on third downs? And here's the thing. Ben Roethlisberger, in those third and long situations now, or at least yesterday, he was not gunning for those chains. He was gladly taking 6 or 7 yards and just walking off the field, you know, as part of him reeling it back in, I guess, if you will. So it's amazing to think throughout this season, through the first four games, how many more points this offense may have been able to put up if not for all these, you know, holding and pre-snap and silly penalties that they're getting. It's absolutely got to start coming to an end because they keep shooting themselves in the foot. And like I said, it seems to be happening quite a bit down on the opponent's other end of the field.
Okay, so the first half after that first drive, the Ravens run 17 plays, get 27 yards. The Steelers obviously kick two field goals. Then they get the fumble. They get the first touchdown, and then the second touchdown drive. Dave, I don't know that there's a lot to say about, you know, the Steelers moved the ball incredibly effectively. They used a lot of different guys. We saw the last drive was the Martavis Bryant drive. We saw them use the middle of the field. They get Juju for a touchdown on, you know, Ben going to probably his third read at that point in time when he sees Juju break open over the middle.
Hey, Juju's learning that backyard ball, ain't he?
he is learning that backyard ball. Let's go back to the play on the second drive where there was criticism of Ben for not reading AB on a drag, a short cross that he then I don't know if it's a design pick with Jesse James, but there's guys crossing in the middle of the field. AB turns it and goes basically post. And I saw beat writers, I saw media guys, I saw fans, I saw everybody say, you know, Ben missed AB wide open, a sure touchdown, because that's what Fouts or somebody said on the television. My God, can we just be clear on one thing here? That is not a design play. That was, you mentioned, you know, playing sandlot ball. I mean, there's no play in the playbook where, and I think Charlie Batch tweeted this later in the game, like, that's not a pattern. That is AB running something and then breaking it off when Ben's already he's reading across the field left to right, and he's already, you know, he's under a little bit of duress at that point in time, and he's going to Le'Veon Bell. Ben did not miss AB. As in many plays, guys break open late in plays. That's what happened. But that there's no fault in my mind on Ben Roethlisberger on that play. Do you agree or disagree?
You see Todd Haley's reaction? Go back and watch Todd Haley. I mean, right when the play's happening, go look, he's raising his hands like, oh, no, you missed him. But with that said, I think that was a mesh. I mean, that was a mesh concept. They got past the mesh point, and then AB turned it up. I will say this. They should look at that, and they should make that.
They should put it in the playbook.
Right,
right.
a mesh and go. If you can buy, if you can buy
four seconds, three and a half seconds.
Right. If you can buy Roethlisberger the time, it's fun to joke about, but I'm being serious here because
listen, when something breaks open like that, you got to think about why it happened, right?
Right. Right. And the mesh, AB's guy was rubbed off by Jesse James, I think it was. And then he just turned it up. So if you can put something in there that with a pump fake to the running back, you can run the same thing. You might want to change up the formation just a tad, just to throw other teams off there. But hell yeah, that would be in the playbook for me. But yeah, Ben was consciously making the decision, trying not to hold the football and look at 14 different options on the field here. I think his mind was made up to go to Bell real quick after the initial read was not there. So, yeah, he missed him. AB was upset. Todd Haley threw his hands up immediately as Ben gets rid of the pass. But I don't believe that was a design play. And while we're on the subject of Todd Haley, people on Twitter and I think on email want us to chime in on Todd Haley. Is Todd Haley calling perfect games? Absolutely not. There's not a coordinator, offense coordinator in the league that calls. I don't know, but that guy in Los Angeles.
McVay. Is McVay calling his own plays? He's 31 years old, man.
I don't know, but
he's old.
Jesus, if he's
my favorite offense in the NFL, Los Angeles Rams. If you had said that 6 months ago, people would be, they'd be dripping with sarcasm and irony.
Holy crap, Jared! I mean, that team with Jared Goff. I mean, take your hat off and hand it to him. But back to
no junior year slump. Holy cow!
You ain't lying. But back to Todd Haley. No, he's not calling perfect games, I've seen enough. Even though it broke open against the game, you always don't like them when they don't break open, and it broke open, I think, last year against who was it, Miami. But I've seen enough of Darius Heyward-Bey on reverses, and in the rounds, kind of thing. I understand why they do it, yada yada, but. I think Mike Tomlin, or who was it? Or even Haley, I think, put it best this past week in his talk with the media. Every play, for the most part, has a built-in run option, a check, or you can check to a different play. And obviously, the play itself generally always has, unless you're running all verticals, has a short pass route, has a intermediate pass route, and a deep pass route. It's not like,
they're rarely having full protection and two guys in a pattern. It's not the way they run.
Right, and Ben Roethlisberger is not told. Other plays in there where the primary is probably going to be the primary 90% of the time. Yes, are there probably some plays where there is really only one main receiving option? Yes, but for the most part, it's quarterback's choice. And go back and listen to what Todd Haley said, what Mike Tomlin even said in his Saturday evening interview with Bob Labriola, that a lot of times it's what the quarterback step up and what he sees at the line of scrimmage. And even then, it's post snap and the post snap progression and reads that ultimately determine where Ben goes with the football. And sometimes people gonna take this the wrong way, as they usually do when we talk about Ben Roethlisberger. Sometimes I don't think Ben knows what he's looking at on the other side, to be quite honest with you. I really don't. Sometimes I think he gets his mind made up, and I think in times where he tries to reel himself in, like we saw in yesterday, we see a little bit of a little bit more of him being. Look, this offense is not in rhythm right now. The run was fine yesterday, but the passing game is still not in rhythm. It seems sometimes some of Ben Roethlisberger's best plays are when he avoids the sack and the play gets extended. However, comma, two great throws one was high, but you can do that when you have a guy like Martavis Bryant. But I think they were back-to-back plays to Martavis.
Yeah, back-to-back plays. Yep. It was the last drive of the half.
Right, and then a absolutely bullet on a nice route inside of a zone area to Juju that I think converted a first down. A nice throw to Vance McDonald over the middle that Vance McDonald dropped. You know, and that's becoming I shouldn't say becoming a problem because it's been a problem with McDonald during his time with the 49ers. It's now
yeah, he had a catch in the game that was called back because of penalty, and the other target he dropped.
Right, and it's just lacking that I don't know Tom Brady element of an offense. I don't know, you know.
My thought on Ben, and we can get again Todd Haley. It all comes down to execution for the players. The plays are going to work. There was nothing in yesterday's game plan. The Steelers drove the ball beautifully from their own 3-yard line all the way down the field, and Villanueva gets a penalty. They convert the first third down on 3rd and 5 on the opening drive when they're starting inside their 20 and go drive for 10 minutes. It wasn't – there's nothing – play calling was fine. They executed. Things were great. They got penalties. And then they scored on 2 other drives in the first half. That first half is about as good as it can be. I mean, if you don't get the penalties in the red zone, maybe that game's 28-0. Who knows? But it wasn't. But it was 19-0, and that's a hell of a first half. So there are zero complaints about it. Now I'll go bat crazy about the second half. The Steelers coming out. But one more thing about the first half is and about Ben's play. Is look, if Ben hits either Martavis Bryant or Antonio Brown on the first two plays of the game against the Bears, or Martavis Bryant in this game on that deep ball it was early in the fourth quarter, I mean, he just needs to hit some of these shots, and that's what it's going to take for this offense to be elite. You remember the first 4 games last year, first 5 games, Sammy Coates was averaging 40 yards a catch, and it wasn't on 2 catches. It was on 10, 15 catches. I mean, he was catching the long balls. And this year in the first 4 games, they've hit very few of those. They got some pass interference calls for sure, and they hit 1 or 2, but they have missed on some of these shots. And that's the difference between, this offense scoring 30 points a game or scoring 20 points a game, which is what they're doing right now. They're, 24 points a game. They could have 3 or 4 more touchdowns, and that's the complete difference. They're not getting any of the home run plays that they're taking shots at. So that's kind of where I put it. Now, to get back to Todd Haley, I was losing my mind in the second half when I tweeted this, hey, Ravens, it's first down. We're going to run Le'Veon Bell over the right side, because it literally felt like to me, and I would ask Mike this, and I wouldn't phrase it like this, but it literally felt like to me they came out in the second half and their objective was to run clock. That was their primary objective. It wasn't to score points. It wasn't to do anything. It was the anti-Atlanta Falcons in the Super Bowl. The objective was to just run clock. And all of a sudden, you're halfway through the third quarter, and it looks like it's 19-11. It ends up being 19-9. But, it's a football game again, and they haven't done anything. So that is the one thing that bothered me about how the Steelers came out in the second half.
Them Steelers offensive coordinators on Twitter were probably even begging for a bubble screen on first down.
Yeah, there you go. A little unlucky with the interception and the missed field goal. It wasn't perfect, but, you got to live with that.
They've got to find – yeah, I mean, I'll admit. I mean, and what did I write on Twitter? 20 of 33 first down plays were runs? Something like that.
And I would imagine I would be even more interested to see the half by half breakdown if it was all runs in the second half.
The thing is, you need some higher percentage first down pass plays. I think 3 or 4 yards via pass. That's why it cracks me up when people get mad at these quick wide receiver screens on first down. Their run game alternatives, a lot of them are built into RPOs anyway. In other words, you count the guys in the box, you see what the coverage is outside if you have the numbers there, and all that dictates whether the ball gets handed off or thrown on a quick you know, up the field to the tight end or a wide receiver that's in the slot, or a wide receiver screen out to the edge there. That's all built into one play. And that, you know, a lot of times, if the average fans don't understand that, all Todd Haley's calling is screens, where a lot of that's dictated by what Ben Roethlisberger sees. And they need to. I think the whole goal of this game, I think Ben put the whole game plan out there early in the week, man. I mean, I got to reel myself in. I got to stop focusing on AB too much, and we got to force the run. And they forced the run maybe a little bit too much on early downs there. Now, going back to Ben one more time, and I'll also make sure what I'm thinking about, we got a lot of great math emails from listeners. Boy, what a great resource we have, right, David? I mean,
hey, somebody give me a job too, by the way. while you're doing everything else, give me a job. I'm available to do a variety of different things.
And I would like a nice sheet cake as well. And
we heard from Matt King. He's a Stanford, getting his master's in engineering at Stanford. We heard from a few other people whose names I don't have, just a couple other people, but appreciate all the comments on the math as well.
Right, and because of that, I think I'm going to start using both average and the median, you know, present both of them, because I think there's enough people out there that would like both of them, and that way, you know, it's like GIF and GIF. You know, you please both the crowds when you use both of them. But going back specifically to what happened on Sunday against
the Ravens. By the way, the Ravens rushing game yesterday is a perfect example of this. One carry for 50 yards, one carry for 23 yards. And what they run for total, they ran for, you know, what they run for 80 yards total, right?
What did they run for? 82 plus 7 and then minus. So they ran for 82 yards, 82 net yards.
Yeah, 82 yards. And then two of those plays went for 73.
Right. So
the average is whatever the average, 5.5 or something. And the median is going to be, you know, 2.
But with that said, but like I said, though, they did. I mean, it was only 15 runs, but they had and that's such a small set to be talking about probably success rates, you know, in there. But when you know, they ran good a high percentage of the time, and when they ran bad, they five of those unsuccessful plays lost yardage even. So, you know, when it was good, it was good. When it was bad, as the old saying goes. But
let's talk a little bit about the good, because we haven't talked about the defense yet.
All right, hold on real quick and about the Ben Roethlisberger thing. And I mean, this is becoming a trend here. His average intended passing distance against the Ravens was 10.3 yards. Did it feel like his average passing distance was 10.3 yards? To me, I was surprised. I had to recheck that my calculator did good math there on that.
Well, you got to remember, as you mentioned, a couple targets to Martavis were all downfield. Juju's targets were a couple of them were downfield, and Jesse James a couple downfield. So those were all kind of felt like 15 to 18 yards in the air. You know, the touchdown to Juju. You know, I'm a little surprised it's 10, but I'm not surprised it's higher than 6. Let's put it that way.
And don't forget, he had a couple of those immaculate shovels in there as well, too. Sometimes I don't know how Ben gets rid of that ball.
Yeah, that was a good pass to Le'Veon off to the right there. That was a big play.
But his average completed passing distance was 6.9. So, once again, we're with a differential of over 3.0. So that just goes to show you that some of these deeper shots, you know, he's not hitting on. Now, when he does, look out. You know, if you can start making teams pay over the top, you imagine the spacing you can get. The thing is that he really hasn't, you know, outside of some pass interference penalties, really has he, you know, he hasn't really connected deep down the field, and, you know, talking over 20 yards or so. So, you know, that's a little bit discouraging still at this point when it comes to Ben and his passing numbers. And look, I mean, make no bones about it, David. How many, you know, he was 18 of 30. You know, that's what's that percentage work out to?
18 of 30, it was 60%, right?
Is that what that is?
Yeah, 60, straight 60.
Okay, not bad, but I mean, two or three of those were deflected at the line of scrimmage. One of them, as I said, was that one that he just threw up to AB that he's lucky didn't get picked off. One of them obviously went into the books as an interception that probably should have been a completion. So yeah, I mean, numbers probably not as bad, as they look maybe on paper, with 216 yards, one TD, and one interception. But boy, like I said, if he could just get this deep ball going, I think it would cure a lot of ills.
Yeah, I thought Ben was good in the first half. Less good in the second half. I thought it was one of his better games of the year. Again, let's remember a couple things here. Just big picture, a couple things. One is, I'm going to list all the teams with a better record than the Steelers after, 4 weeks. The Chiefs, the end. The Chiefs are 3-0. They play Washington tonight. We'll see. It's very rare in the NFL season that you have no undefeated teams or one undefeated team after 4 weeks. You generally are going 6-7 weeks into the season at least. Yesterday, what a great day. Look, say whatever you want about the league, man. The games are as good as they've ever been right now, at least in recent memory. You get Carolina go to New England and win in a great game. You get Buffalo beating Atlanta in Atlanta. Those are your two Super Bowl teams last year. They both lost at home as heavy favorites. Just hearkening back to the Steelers losing to the Bears on the road. Both the Super Bowl teams last year lost at home as heavy favorites. And then you had Dallas lose to the Rams. It's the NFL, and right now more than any time in recent memory, Dave, it's any given Sunday. Very hard to discern who the best teams are. The Texans all of a sudden good with Deshaun Watson? Are the Rams a really good team? There are teams out there that, Atlanta and New England, there are serious question marks about them. So, New England's played three games. They played three of their four games at home. They could have lost all three, and they've given up at least 30 in all three and given up 40 in one. They've given up the second most points in the NFL. So, I realize things haven't been perfect for the Steelers, but the goal is to win games, and they're 3-1. Having played three of their four games on the road and two of them in the division, I realize one's the Browns, but whatever. So, things that – They may not look perfect in Pittsburgh, but they're a lot worse a lot of other places.
Someone will tell you, we don't care what it is other places.
You're right.
We only care what it is. I feel you here. But here's the thing. The offense still hasn't reached their potential. And they're going to have better games than they have had in the first four. At least one would think that they are. And when those good games come, they're going to be really, really good, I think. So take comfort in the fact that the offense has not even scratched the surface of being able to hit any kind of rhythm or stride yet. Le'Veon Bell, I guess the internets were wrong, David. He's not done.
And the Jacksonville is going to be a great test for this offense because Jacksonville. They gave up two home run running plays yesterday to lose that football game. They gave up two runs of, 70 yards or whatever they were. But they're a good defensive football team. It's going to be very interesting to see how the Steelers compete against them, I think, this Sunday.
All right, you said you want to talk about some positives on the defensive side of the ball.
Cam Hayward, Mike Hilton, Ryan Shazier. The defense gave up two long runs you'd like not to see. But, overall, the defense, I thought, played well. They made some really good pass breakups. Sean Davis played by far his best game of the year. Cam, two sacks and a forced fumble and a recovery. Shazier with an interception and a tip ball. They didn't all – not every play was perfect. T.J. Watt wasn't – I didn't think he was a big factor in that game. Stuff on one or two plays. But I just overall – I think the defense was really solid. Now, we can talk about how much the Ravens offense sucks, which is it, the chicken or the egg? But the defense was good yesterday.
Yeah, I'm getting tired of seeing Vince Williams kind of beat have a offensive lineman get to the second level and get in front of his face on some of those outside runs.
I agree.
Ryan Shazier is that type of guy that you're just going to have to take the bad along with the super good. he's never not going to be out of control coming. He'd probably have 10 or 12 more tackles this year, maybe 6 tackles for losses if he kept his body under control. But then it goes back kind of to chicken and egg. Would he you know, have the ability to stay under control if he wasn't getting flashing through the defensive line the way that he is? So
yeah, on the fumble, he was the first guy through, made contact, and then Hayward gets a hand in on the bottom and mocks it loose. You know, he set up that play. He obviously set up the tipped interception, and he made an interception. I mean, all 3 turnovers he was directly involved in.
Right, and what I'm getting at is he played fantastic. He was all over the field yesterday, and we're just going to have to accept that there's going to be some missed tackles by him.
Right, right.
You know, not staying in control and not bringing his feet with him, as Keith Butler likes to say there. So, yeah, let's see. Wilcox filled in for Mitchell. I thought he did a good job. You know, he got stiff-armed on that long run by Collins. I think maybe one other play, maybe a missed tackle there. But outside of that, he's like running into a fire hydrant, I think.
I like J.J. Wilcox, and I'm with you. I saw some people critical of him on Twitter. I thought he was pretty good. I thought, again, Sean Davis, very secure in his tackling, it looked like, in this game. Made 3 or 4 plays, a big pass breakup early in the first half. I think on a 3rd down play where he came across the guy. I thought the timing was excellent there. Hilton had one where he got the back of a guy's helmet, I think Perriman's helmet, but you know, no call on that. He broke up a 3rd down. We didn't see Artie or Hayden get tested all that much, but you know, I just Vince Williams, I thought you made a very good point. Bud made a huge play and also got a sack. And maybe that's all you need to do. I didn't think T.J. Watt was too much of a factor. But, you know, as a group, I thought the defense was good again. And, you know, you think about the points they've given up here through 4 weeks. And again, they haven't played high powered offenses and they're not going to play another one this week. But they've done what they've needed to do. I mean, the Steelers, obviously, you know, the run game last week against Chicago, an awful first half and an awful overtime. You thought they had it sorted out in the second half. They gave the offense a chance to win the game. And then they broke down completely in overtime. But I think that I think it's solid improvement from the defense so far this year. I think there's something there to be happy about.
And remember, Sunday was the first time this season that Cam Hayward, Javon Hayward, Cam Hayward, Javon Hargrave, Stephon Tuitt, Watt, Dupree, Vince Williams, and Ryan Shazier have all been on the field together. Yeah. First time.
And, 37, yeah.
And your original 11 have yet to play together because of Mike Mitchell missing yesterday's game. So, you know, there's, as long as this team's, it's so good to see them be able to play so much dime now and get a guy like Vince Williams off the field for, you know, 28 or whatever plays. And Hilton looks very, very comfortable in what his role is. So too does William Gay. You know, everybody looks like they kind of, you know, in passing downs, they look like they kind of know where they need to be. Now, with that said, they sure seem to, you know, some of these 3-man rushes and dropping 8, they still allow some holes that I don't understand why are there. I think Flacco hit 1 or 2 of those yesterday in such situations when they're dropping 8. And then obviously I can't wait to see what happened on the touchdown pass to Mike Wallace there to see what exactly. It's hard to tell on the TV angle what happened on that
good
play.
Good throw by Flacco there. He didn't make a lot of them. That was a good one.
Right. And look, I mean, we talk about, you know, play circling plays and plays being left on the field. Mike Wallace turned Artie Burns all the way around, and if Flacco puts that ball a little bit higher, and if Mike Wallace doesn't have Mike Wallace hands, that's to the house.
That's probably a touch. Yeah, you're right. We talk about big plays. Let's not gloss over that. That was early in the game, and we talk about Steelers. You know, Ben missing Martavis against the Bears to open the game. That very well could have been a touchdown. I don't think the safety gets there. Probably JJ, I can't remember, but I don't think he gets there to knock him out of bounds. So that is probably a touchdown. He had him clean beat, and he still should have made the catch for 40 yards. But yeah, a really good throw, and he's in stride for a touchdown.
Yeah, J.J. Wilcox, and look, props to J.J. Wilcox for still finishing that play, because you don't know if that guy's going to, you know, come up with it or not. I mean, it was already a drop at that point, but at least he finished. Wilcox finished there, and, you know, if Flacco puts that thing six inches higher, there, Mike Wallace, that's to the house right there. And boy, you go back and look at that thing, and Artie's just turned, Artie screwed into the ground right at the snap there, and had to turn and run there. So that was a big miss. Perriman, Flacco missing Perriman over there on the side on one of those throws. I think that was an out and up. Against a zone defense, I think, as well, too. Flacco high on that one to Perriman. So, yeah, you know, that defensive unit wasn't perfect.
Wasn't perfect. A couple other things. You know, Boswell missed a field goal. Jordan Berry, not his best game, so it's probably the worst. Those two guys as a combo have been this season. Generally, they've been excellent. You know, Boswell hits the 49-yarder, then misses the 44-yarder. That kept it more of a game than people would have liked. We were talking about the coaching decisions about how they came out in the second half and ran the ball on first down seemingly every time rather than play action or doing something different. I didn't like the Steelers rushing three against Flacco. I thought it should have always been four and five more often. He's not a mobile quarterback. He's a guy who he can make, you know, physically he can make all the throws. So I was not comfortable with them giving him time and rushing three on some of those plays. As you pointed out, some worked, some didn't. But I didn't love. That. We didn't talk about the interception. The short answer is, I think everybody's on the same page. It's a ridiculous call saying Antonio Brown didn't have possession. He took three or four steps. It looked like even changed. You know, tucked the ball away. And then, but if you don't call, if you call not possession, then the whole knee thing is a non-event. It doesn't make any difference whether his knee's down or not because he doesn't have possession and the ball's never hit the ground. So I don't think it was very well explained on the television. I don't think it was well explained by the officials. But the point was they ruled he didn't have possession, so the knee doesn't come into play. Now, I think all of us watching the game live and then watching the replays just assumed that obviously he had possession and his knee's down. So it wasn't going to the ground with the catch. Which is, you know, people were arguing with me on this about Twitter, on Twitter about this. That it wasn't going to the ground for the catch because you have the catch and you've had possession, your knee hits the ground, you're down. It's not going to the ground. It's he never had possession.
Yeah, and Mike Tomlin didn't seem to have an issue with it during his.
No, he didn't.
You know, during his post game. To me, it sure looked like he had enough possession to start running with the football, you know. I've gone back and watched it, you know, five, six times, and knowing the outcome now leads you to say, okay, I understand it now, but I don't know. I mean, if he looked down, he looked down to me, but
he was down, but they, you know, they didn't call possession. So
yeah, I mean, what I mean is he looked down with possession to me.
Right, you thought he caught it. Yeah, so did I.
Right.
Let me ask you one other thing. The Mike Tomlin going for two at 19-3 or nothing or whatever it was. That makes sense to you or no?
Going for two at 19-0?
Yeah.
And
in the first half. That's what it was. It was 19-0. It didn't make it. Look, it's one of those things. I think Tomlin should go for two all the time. So let me say that. I'm not. It's not anything I lost any sleep over. It's not anything I went nuts about. The game progresses, you look back and say you didn't take that point, you should have done it. If you're not going to say it at the time, then you don't have any validity of saying it later. But there were plenty of people who asked it at the time, you know, does 20 points versus 19 or 21 at a lead of those numbers make any difference to you?
No, it don't.
I know people are going to have a problem with it. I didn't have a problem with it. I didn't love the play call, but I didn't have a problem with it.
Yeah, and even so, that's the one, the quick out to Antonio, right?
He should have caught it.
He should have caught it, whether or not he comes up short on that.
Yeah, half a yard short. And I wondered if what he was trying to do there, if you watch the replay, if he was trying to catch the ball and immediately reach it over the goal line before he got tackled, because he knew he was going to get hit. And I think maybe the reason he didn't catch it is because he was trying to get it and get it forward before he got drilled.
Right. I agree with that. Boy, so many in the Terrence West two-point conversion there. Boy, there's so many. It seems like on a weekly basis now. I don't know if they're magnified because of the internet or what, you know, social media. But boy, these guys sure seem to miss more and more calls, on a weekly basis here. I mean, not only in Steelers game, but around the league as well. David, did you know? I knew who King Kamehameha was.
No, I still do not. Sounds like a Hawaiian king.
But I knew who that was before yesterday's game, but I sure didn't know what that's called, a certain type of move or something. That I'm old enough to not know what he did after that touchdown now.
I had no idea. Did you know the guy that Boswell tied in field goals when he had his 57th? The guy, I think it was like Mike Heath or something like that. Never heard of him.
No, I didn't know that one either.
All right.
But, final thoughts on the game.
A win on the road in Baltimore by 16 points. We did a lot of, I wouldn't say nitpicking, but there was a lot to be critical of. But they beat a Ravens team that they hadn't beaten in Baltimore in a long time. They did it and Mike Freeman wrote an article on Bleacher Report. And I don't always love what Mike writes, but he said they throttled the Ravens. And the fact of the matter is, aside from being bad second half offensively, they did throttle the Ravens. And I think my takeaway, maybe even more than anything about the Steelers, Dave, is the Ravens aren't the second best team in the AFC North. It's the Bengals, even though the Ravens beat them in week one. The Ravens are not a team to worry about.
Yeah, they're going to have their problems on. Look, they're still going to be fine defensively. They're going to be in a lot of games because of their defense. The question is what can the Ravens offense do? Look, I mean, they got the Oakland Raiders coming up this week, and I think they got to go out west to play them. So it's going to be a big test for them. I don't feel threatened by the Ravens, and like I said, previewing the last couple weekend games, I think the Bengals' defense is for real with them as well. And I think the question about their offense, their offense is definitely better than what they played the first couple of games there. And I think we've kind of seen that in the last two games with the Bengals. So I think they're going to win. Here's the thing. I still don't think either one of those teams win more than 9 games.
Let me give you the Ravens' schedule over the next couple of weeks. So what do they stand now? 2-2, right?
Right.
They're at the Raiders. That's probably a loss. They're 2-3. They get the Bears at home. Let's call it a win. They're 3-3. They're at the Vikings. That's going to be tough. They get the Dolphins at home. Let's give them a win there. They're at the Titans. And then they're at the Packers. And then they have Texans home. I mean, they're not. I don't think they're coming out of that stretch of games, that stretch of 6 games, potentially at 500. I mean, I think you could see them at 3-5 after 8 weeks.
Yeah, it's possible.
Two and two. Well, you get the idea. That's a tough stretch of games on the road.
Absolutely, absolutely. And look, I mean, you look around the AFC, and right now, and even the league in whole, and I think you put it best. There's only one team out there with a record better than the Steelers, and it's the Chiefs. And we'll see what happens to them later on tonight against the Washington Redskins. There, so a lot to be thankful. If you're a Steelers fan, be thankful that the running game got. Found its grip. I said last week, I think on Friday, David, get Le'Veon Bell outside those tackles a little bit, and they did. Nothing makes me happier than seeing the power run anyway. And one quick final note: at least Vance McDonald can block. At least he can block, and he can block good on the move. DeCastro, I thought, was great on the move. Roosevelt Nix will mess you up, son. He will mess you up if he gets to you at the second level. Good to see him on the field for a good handful of snaps. B.J. Finney, 10, 11, 12 snaps as an extra tight end in that game as well, too. Now all we need to do is see the passing game kind of find some rhythm, click a little bit more, get Ben completing them downfield. The defense playing great against the pass right now. I'd like to see him shore up some of those things in the running game. But I mean, other than that, I mean, hard to complain about what you see out of the defensive side of football, especially comparing back at the same time last year with the Steelers as well too. So Jaguars coming up. On Sunday at Heinz Field, David and I will try to have a Jacksonville Jaguars beat writer on our Wednesday show. In the meantime, you can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. You can follow David Todd on Twitter at David M. Todd. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you like what we do and you want to donate to the cause, go to SteelersDepot.com and hit that donate button upper right navigational bar. Thanks for all the emails and from listeners this past week. Especially those answering my math questions as well too, because sometimes I add two and two together and get 6.
17. a very interesting 4-week stretch now that was much more interesting than it was coming into the season. Jaguars at home, and then the Steelers go to Kansas City. They get the Bengals at home, and then they get a Sunday night game at Detroit. Well, all of a sudden, Detroit looks like they might be for real. So, this 7-1 in the first half, the Steelers have already gotten their loss, and they get some, they should beat the Jaguars at home, but three very interesting games after that. So, should be a fun month of October for us to get into things. Again, thanks to all our listeners. Dave, thoughts with everybody in Las Vegas. And as always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.